VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Dan Friedel, and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Pfizer announced Wednesday that its COVID-19 vaccine is safe and strongly protects children as young as 12. The news may lead to vaccinating that age group before they return to school in the autumn. Most COVID-19 vaccines available are for adults who are at higher risk from the coronavirus. Pfizer's vaccine is approved for children ages 16 and older. But vaccinating children of all ages might be important to stopping the spread of the coronavirus. In a study of 2,260 U.S. volunteers ages 12 to 15, early results showed there were no cases of COVID-19 among those fully vaccinated. There were 18 cases of coronavirus infection among those given a placebo, Pfizer reported. The study was small and has not yet been published. However, researchers reported high levels of antibodies, somewhat higher than were seen in studies of young adults. The children had side effects that were similar to those of young adults, the company said. The main side effects are pain, high temperature, chills, and tiredness, especially after the second injection. The study will continue to follow the children for 2 years for more information about protection and safety. Pfizer and its German partner, BioNTech, plan in the coming weeks to ask the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and European regulators to permit emergency use of the vaccine starting at age 12. We share the urgency to expand the use of our vaccine, Pfizer chief Albert Bourla said in a statement. He expressed the hope of starting to vaccinate this age group before the start of the next school year in the United States. Pfizer is not the only company seeking to lower the age limit for its vaccine. Results also are expected by the middle of this year from a U.S. study of Moderna's vaccine in 12 to 17-year-olds. Because the findings were promising, the FDA already permitted both companies to begin U.S. studies on children 11 and younger. They plan to study children as young as 6 months old in the future. The chief of BioNTech, Uğur Şahin, said in a statement, "We are longing for a normal life. This is especially true for our children." AstraZeneca last month began a study of its vaccine on children ages 6 to 17 in Britain. Johnson & Johnson is planning its own studies. In China, Sinovac recently announced it has given new data to Chinese regulators showing its vaccine is safe in children as young as 3. One important question is the amount of vaccine. Pfizer gave the 12 and older children the same amount as adults. It is testing different amounts in younger children. I'm Susan Shand.
may have recently heard of NFT technology, which permits digital works of art to be collected and sold for millions of dollars.
But why would people pay so much money for something they cannot even touch? And what is driving the current rise in NFTs? Here are some basics to help you understand the technology.
NFT stands for non-fungible token. It is something that only exists in the digital world. It is based on a technology called blockchain, which is also used with digital currency systems known as cryptocurrency.
Blockchain is an online list containing information that can be used and shared within a large network open to the public. The technology permits pieces of information to be checked and stored safely. An NFT can be attached to a piece of digital artwork or other things existing in digital form. The NFT can be used to provide proof that the pieces are authentic. This is what permits digital artwork to be bought and sold. While anyone can view the work, the buyer has official ownership rights over the objects.
NFTs can exist in the form of images, video, music, and text. They are usually bought with electronic money. The form of digital currency mainly used with NFTs is called Ether. NFTs have been used to sell sports videos, pieces of land in worlds that only exist on computers, and even the first ever tweet by Twitter's founder. A robot created a piece of art that was recently sold as an NFT.
Artists like the idea of NFTs because the technology gives them a way to create and claim complete ownership over their digital works. This can make the artwork more rare, meaning the artists can sell their digital pieces for higher prices.
One NFT piece was recently sold by an American digital artist known as Beeple. The artist, whose real name is Mike Winkleman, lives in South Carolina. His creation, Everydays, the first 5,000 days, a collection of 5,000 images, sold in March for nearly $70 million. Because of the blockchain technology, Beeple will continue to earn money each time his art changes hands. He gets 10% of the price after every sale. Another American artist, Anne Spalter, sells some work as NFTs. At first, she did not think NFTs were a good idea, but then changed her mind. She says the technology has made people who might never go to an art gallery in person interested in art. However, she says she remains mystified by how high the prices went for some pieces.
Critics note that traditional art, like a painting, can be placed on a wall and looked at. But digital art is different. They point out that even though an artist can own a digital piece, others can easily save a copy of the same work as a file on their computer. Supporters of NFT technology note that such ownership means the digital artwork truly belongs to the artist, who can then sell it. Other people who have the same file on their computer or phone only own a copy.
When asked about his artwork selling for such a high price, people called it crazy. Since the technology is new, not many people know what the future holds for NFT art. Some may grow in value, while others may become worthless, people said. He added that NFTs are giving people another way to invest outside of the stock market.
In February, a 10-second video showing an image of former U.S. President Donald Trump sold on an NFT marketplace for over $6 million. The first ever published tweet from Twitter founder Jack Dorsey recently sold for nearly $3 million. He donated the money to an organization that supports families in Africa. But some NFTs sell for much less. Mark Cuban, a businessman and owner of the NBA's Dallas Mavericks, sold a tweet for about $1,000 in February. In January, a video of basketball star LeBron James sold for $100,000. That led American sports organizations to look at NFTs as a possible new way to earn money from their videos.
Are NFTs good investments?
It is too early to say if NFTs are good investments, but so far, many people have items that are worth more than what they paid for them. This is no guarantee, however, that such buyers will be able to sell their digital objects for a profit. Max Dillendorf is a digital money lawyer in New York City. He says many people currently involved in NFT markets are not really thinking it through carefully. At the same time, Dillendorf said he does expect NFTs to continue to grow.
The New York Times experimented with an NFT for a technology story that appeared in the newspaper. The story was called "Buy This Column on the Blockchain." The writer, Kevin Roos, listed his column for sale in an NFT market called Foundation. It cost about $100 to list. The money raised from the article would go to a charity. In the story, Roos discussed how he put his column up for sale and also explained things the successful buyer would get. For example, the buyer was to be written about in a future story and would receive a message from a popular podcaster. The Times column sold for 350 Ether. On March 25th, that equaled about $560,000. So far, the winning buyer has not publicly come forward.
Only two other living artists, Jeff Koons and David Hockney, have had their work sell for a price close to what Beeple's piece brought. And their art is physical, not digital. Some experts think artists whose work you can touch will be able to soon use blockchain technology to sell digital versions of their famous art. So, what can we expect next? Among other things, a New York-based watchmaker, Jacob & Company, plans to auction off a digital version of one of the company's real watches that sells for over $200,000. It hopes the NFT will bring in at least that much in the April auction. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of the presidency of Ronald Reagan. Soon after his presidency began, there was an attempt on his life. A gunman shot President Reagan in March 1981. Doctors removed the bullet. He rested, regained his strength, and returned to the White House in 12 days. The new president wanted to reduce the size of the federal government. He and other conservative Republicans wanted less government interference in the lives of Americans. President Reagan won congressional approval for his plan to reduce income tax rates. Many Americans welcomed the plan. Others were concerned about its effects on the national debt. They saw taxes go down while defense spending went up. To save money, the Reagan administration decided to cut spending for some social programs. This pleased conservatives. Liberals, however, said it limited poor people's chances for good housing, health care, and education. President Reagan also had to make decisions about using military force in other countries. In 1983, he sent Marines to Lebanon. They joined other peacekeeping troops to help stop fighting among competing groups. On October 23rd, a truck carrying explosives bombed Marine housing at Beirut International Airport.
There was nothing in its appearance to suggest it was any different than the trucks or cars that were normally seen on and around the airport. But this one was different. At the wheel was a young man on a suicide mission. The truck carried some 2,000 pounds of explosives. But there was no way our Marine guards could know this. Their first warning that something was wrong came when the truck crashed through a series of barriers. The guards opened fire, but it was too late. The truck smashed through the doors of the headquarters building in which our Marines were sleeping and instantly exploded.
241 Americans were killed. Two days later, Marines led an invasion of the Caribbean island nation of Grenada. Communist forces were rebelling against the government there. Cuban soldiers were guarding the streets. President Reagan said he feared for the safety of American students at a medical school in Grenada. He sent the Marines to get them out safely. The Marines quickly defeated the communist forces. Many Americans were pleased. Others were angry. They said Grenada was invaded only to make people forget about what happened in Lebanon. The next year, 1984, was a presidential election year. It looked like no one could stop President Reagan. His warm way with people had made him hugely popular. He gained support with the military victory in Grenada. And by the time the campaign started, inflation was under control. The Republican Party renominated Ronald Reagan for president and George Bush for vice president. There were several candidates for the Democratic Party's nomination. One was the first African-American to seek the presidency, Jesse Jackson. He was a Protestant clergyman and a longtime human rights activist. The candidate who finally won the nomination was Walter Mondale. He had been a senator and had served as vice president under President Jimmy Carter. The vice presidential candidate was Congresswoman Geraldine Ferraro. It was the first time a major party in the United States had nominated a woman for national office.
Tonight, the daughter of working Americans tells all Americans that the future is within our reach if we're willing to reach for it.
One issue in the election campaign was taxes. Political candidates often try to avoid talking about taxes with voters. But former Vice President Bondale did talk about the issue. He said taxes would have to be raised to pay for new government programs.
The American people will have to pay Mr. Reagan's bills. The budget will be squeezed. Taxes will go up. And anyone who says they won't is not telling the truth to the American people.
This was a serious political mistake. President Reagan gained even more support as a result. The two candidates agreed to debate on television. During one debate, President Reagan looked old and tired. He did not seem sure of his answers. Yet his popularity was not damaged. On Election Day, he won 59% of the popular vote. On Inauguration Day, the weather was bitterly cold in Washington. All inaugural activities, including the swearing-in ceremony, were held inside. President Reagan's first term began with an attempt on his life. 6 months after his second term began, he faced another threat. Doctors discovered and removed a large growth from his colon. The growth was cancerous. The president was 74 years old. Yet once again, he quickly regained his strength and returned to work. For years, the United States had accused Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi of supporting international terrorist groups. It said he provided them with weapons and a safe place for their headquarters. In January 1986, the United States announced economic actions against Libya. Then it began military training exercises near the Libyan coast. Libya said the Americans were violating its territory and fired missiles at them. The Americans fired back, sinking two ships. On April 5th, a bomb destroyed a dance club in West Berlin. An American soldier and another person were killed. The United States said Libya was responsible. President Reagan ordered a bombing raid on the Libyan cities of Tripoli and Benghazi. Muammar Gaddafi escaped unharmed, but said his adopted daughter was killed. Some Americans said the raid was cruel. Others praised it. President Reagan said the United States did what it had to do. The president also wanted to intervene in Nicaragua. About 15,000 rebel troops, called Contras, were fighting the country's communist government. President Reagan asked for military aid for the Contras. Congress rejected the request. In fact, it banned all aid to the Contras. At that same time, Muslim extremists in Lebanon seized several Americans. The Reagan administration looked for ways to gain the release of the hostages. It decided to sell missiles and missile parts to Iran in exchange for Iran's help. After the sale, Iran told the extremists in Lebanon to release a few American hostages. Not long after, serious charges became public. Reports said that money from the sale of arms to Iran was used to aid the Contra rebels in Nicaragua. Several members of the Reagan administration resigned. It appeared that some had violated the law. President Reagan said he regretted what had happened, but he said he had not known about it. Investigations and court trials of those involved continued into the 1990s. Several people were found guilty of illegal activities or of lying to Congress. No one went to jail. Most Americans did not blame the president for the actions of others in his administration. They still supported him and his policies. They especially supported his efforts to deal with the Soviet Union. At the beginning of his first term, President Reagan called the Soviet Union an evil empire. To protect the United States against the Soviets, he increased military spending to the highest level in American history. Then, in 1985, Mikhail Gorbachev became the leader of the Soviet Union. Reagan and Gorbachev held four summit meetings in Geneva, Switzerland, Reykjavik, Iceland, Washington, and Moscow. Each leader agreed to destroy hundreds of nuclear missiles. President Reagan also urged General Secretary Gorbachev to become more democratic. He spoke about the Berlin Wall, which communists had built to prevent citizens from crossing between East and West Berlin.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
About this time, a new sense of glasnost, or openness, was beginning in the Soviet Union. It was also a time of perestroika, or restructuring. The American economy grew rapidly during Ronald Reagan's presidency, but at the end of his second term, many Americans were concerned by what he left behind. Increased military spending, together with tax cuts, had made the national debt huge. The United States owed thousands of millions of dollars. The debt would be a political issue for presidents to come. Yet Ronald Reagan will be remembered as one of America's most popular presidents. Above his burial place at the Reagan Library in California are these words which speak to Reagan's belief in humanity. I know in my heart that man is good, that what is right will always eventually triumph, and there is purpose and worth to each and every life.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.